In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Betches Media presents.
Madam Speaker. Madam Vice President.
You want to hang out with us? You get your vaccine.
And so I went to Human Resources.
There's some things I just can't tell you on air.
The Betches Sup Podcast.
A woman's problem, if you will.
Hello, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Elise Morales.
And I'm Millie Tamaris.
And this is the Betches Sup Podcast, where C-SPAN uses the group chat to help you process and laugh at the biggest topics in U.S. news and politics. It is the last year of 2021. So the last year of 2021. I'll take that again.
No, that was correct, Amanda.
Oh, man. Great.
You don't need to do that again.
You said the end of democracy and you were not joking.
Well, the biggest topics, I think it's the three of us. We're just going to chat about the three of us this week. We've talked about enough news. We have talked about the news 4 days a week. Sammy, 5 days a week, all year long. I'm sick of it. Elise, what about you?
I'm done. I'm done with the news for now.
For now. So we're going to do a mailbag episode. I had to be convinced into doing this because I always feel uneasy, like thinking that I'm interesting enough to like invite questions about myself. But I think you two are interesting enough. So we're going to go for it. We're raw dogging these. Millie and Elise have not seen these questions. We're going to do it totally spontaneously.
Betches Pups, raw dogs questions.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Betches Pups, you might be able to hear young Rusty in the background there.
Young Rusty. I'm just going to go for the most touching question first, which was that somebody did let us know that their cat passed away, but specifically Rusty content has been helping them through it.
Oh, God bless you. My heart goes out to you. Losing a pet is like, it's so sad, and I feel like society has like never told us where to place some of that sadness. And I promise you that there will continue to be Rusty content for you to enjoy to your heart's delight.
You're so right. I mean, Millie said recently that also there's not really any kind of like, we should, when you get a new dog, it's not, of course, completely comparable to a new baby, but there should be some sort of like, you should be able to have like a registry and people should be checking up on you. And the same goes for animal deaths. So we fully honor the animal.
Oh my God. Sometimes I go up and down the stairs with my dog and I'm like, he's going to get so old one day that he can't go up and down this. Like, I start thinking about that. Like, oh, that must be so hard. I'm so sorry about your cat.
Yeah, so sorry. Definitely a good excuse for Elise to do more Rusty content. I'm going to start with the first question.
I guess I'll do it.
The first question is a bit of a vanity question. I'll read it. It just says, how are you three so absolutely brilliant and gorgeous and hilarious? The people need to know.
I mean, let's can we take that and put it on my Tinder profile?
The only answer to that I have is I think we all needed to hear that, so thank you. That came in through we got the best 100%. Questions through the prompt that I put on my personal stories. Mm-hmm. So you guys are the real ones,
because somebody, those are the true fans.
Those are the true fans. We have more people that listen to this podcast every day than who follow me on Instagram, which makes me feel negatively. So
why does it feel negative?
I don't know. I guess it's because like I don't make social content, so it's fine. Like, why would you? You're not really following me for like added value. But give me a follow. Maybe I can get some free stuff from my way.
I also will say that at least vanity. Just this is like Millie is always going to take the question sincerely.
I know.
But Amanda's like,
I put it on there.
I know, Billy. you know, I think that there's no such thing as ugly people. There's just lazy people.
No.
And it is, but it's not about being lazy or whatever, but it is just like a practice a lifelong practice of knowing, like, what clothes look good on your body, like, what trends you can, and then, like, your skin. And I think that's really important for everybody, man, women, anyone. Yeah. Like, it's important to know, like, what skincare products you use and all that. And it's, like, a process, and it's whatever. And it's a practice, too. And yeah. I think...
And that's specifically, you're talking about what makes you more brilliant, right?
Yes. Inside, well, everything, really. Yeah. But also, yeah, but also just... That's something that I learned, that like really, really hot people work really hard at being hot. And I've seen that it plateau. For me, I see a plateau of like, there's a certain level of hotness that I'm like, it's not even worth it anymore. You're not even dating that much hotter guys. You're, you know what I mean? Because I have some really hot cousins. Yeah,
you gotta know when to stop.
So, yeah, but for everyone, it's just a practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, practice perfect. Of being hot.
Yeah, I'm going to alternate between like political newsy questions and more personal ones, even though we definitely got more personal ones.
Love it.
Somebody said, let's catastrophize together, which could be an alternative title of this podcast for sure. What are your biggest fears for 2022?
Oh, Jesus.
Well... Well,
and I guess maybe like to specify, like maybe how they differ from this year. I'm definitely really scared about the pandemic, and I'm scared about, I'm not scared about Republicans taking the House because that seems very likely. I'm just scared of a cascade of events this in the next year that makes it impossible for Democrats to ever win an election again because they've made them so unfair. I would say that's my number one fear.
Yeah, I think that's, I'm with that. I'm like that Democrats just don't learn any lessons and, you know, never adjust their strategy and stay like, I think to the Republicans' credit, they really have like learned how to manipulate the media and play offensive and just say like outright lies, and Democrats don't, but they don't play, you know, offense. Yep. And I think, you know, with the abortion and with these midterms, I'm just like really scared that it's really going to demoralize a lot of people from voting, and that Democrats aren't going to learn any lessons and not do any big sweeping change that's going to affect anyone day to day, which that's scary.
Yeah, I agree with both of you. And the only other things I would add is like, yeah, I'm really worried about Roe. And like, I mean, we know that the Supreme Court is going to do something to Roe, but I'm worried about like how that's actually going to play out and what's that's going to look like. And like, once Roe goes, you know, like I said this to Amanda and it's really bleak, but since we're catastrophizing, like there will be a name of the first person we learn who like died from a back alley abortion because Roe is gone. And that just is going to be a person whose name we will learn at some point once it goes. And like, that just really makes me sad because that's probably like, there's just probably some young girl out there who has no idea that she's going to be the first victim of this. So that's my really sad thing to say.
Yeah, like it's 2022. We don't need a martyr for abortion rights, but we will get one. We will probably get one.
That like really makes me sad. And then also just going off what you guys said, I just worry about like, yeah, the likelihood that the Republicans are going to take the House is really high. And then like, how much damage, you know, it's hard enough when we have the House, but the Senate is so hard to work with. It's like, if we lose the House, then it's like, no legislation can get passed at all. And like, how much harm can be done to people in the middle of a pandemic and in the middle of an economic recovery when we can't pass anything?
Yeah, I saw a tweet that really made me think yesterday, and it was like, we're in a spot now with these parties that Democrats position it to their voters as like, you have a moral responsibility to vote for us because the alternative could be so much worse. But we're not that good at offering like how much better it could be. So yeah. I think that us relying on how much worse it could be, I don't feel hopeful that that's going to drive turnout. So we have to do something else. Another person asked, are there any political issues you feel hopeful about? I am not one of these people. I think it's a very privileged point of view to be like, this is the abortion fight we need to ensure. Like, I don't think this needs to happen. I hope it does not. But I think that our political system has not worked well at showing how under threat abortion rights have always been, because they've been chipped away at far away from the states where the media tends to live. And people don't really have a sense of how risky this is and how close this has been to going away and how activated Republicans and the far right are against abortion. And with how likely the Supreme Court overturning it seems to be, I do sometimes wonder if that could be the moment that causes a reaction that solidifies abortion rights for the next couple generations and it's no longer a conversation. I don't know exactly how that plays out. I think that in the meantime, people will die, but I try to hold on some hope that if this happens, the political system and Democrats will finally react to protect abortion rights and reproductive justice like the way that they have chosen to not to for 50 years.
I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, it's sad, but like it makes a lot of sense because we have been sort of resting on the Roe ruling without ever actually like codifying the rights into law. And that's how we got into this place. So hopefully we can learn from that. And we need to start like codifying rights into law.
And take it away from Republicans as a political tool because they just have it and they can use it. And if we can take that away from them,
and that's how they activate,
we'll finally give up.
That's how people are able to, like, that is such an important issue for some people that they're able to ignore like all the other terrible things that Republicans do because they just don't want people to have abortions, that they're able to ignore I just know a lot of Hispanic voters who, you know, are able to ignore the Mexican stuff because they're like 2-3 generations removed from immigration and they feel strongly about abortion. So it's like if they don't have abortion, then what are they left with? And it's not much.
The issue that's making me feel really good or that gives me a lot of hope is like the labor rights movement happening right now. And like, you know, right now Kellogg's workers are on strike. Don't buy Kellogg's. But like we've been seeing like a real rise in like class consciousness and consciousness about like work and how work should be done. And I, you know, coming from the millennial generation, like we have that like horrible hustle culture of just accepting fucking anything and like low paid bullshit, like anything to work because we all came of age in 2008 and, you know, afterward, and we're graduating in 2012 and 10 and there weren't jobs. But I think Gen Z is like, they don't take that. They have like a sense of labor rights within them and being like, you know what, I'm not going to work. I'm not going to be abused by my employer. And we're seeing that, you know, across like all these factories, all these different strikes and stuff. And I think that's really awesome. And I think that it's like it belies a lot of grassroots movement that it might take a while. But I think that like this is the movement that's going to get us Medicare for all later. Like the labor rights movement has, when it has been active, has done so much fucking good in this country. Yeah. Like, it's done so much. So the fact that we're seeing a resurgence, it might take time, but that is where I'm putting a lot of my hope for good things to come.
And just to like piggyback off what you were saying, like a lot of office jobs are unionizing. Mm-hmm. And it's so crazy because like I think we talk a lot about like Black Lives Matter and how much that has shifted in the past 4 or 5 years. But somebody shared this like article. One of my friends shared this article that was written in 2015 about like BuzzFeed, about this person's like, I basically want to end my life because I don't work at BuzzFeed and that's like the hottest, coolest place to work. And we were just discussing like that BuzzFeed was the hottest place to work in 2015, but also like no one would write this article now because like attitudes have shifted so much about like no one stands corporations and all that. So it is like it's really crazy to see how it shifted and how quickly. And I will say that just to defend millennials, millennials will quit a job.
That's like,
millennials will quit jobs. Boomers will stay at jobs for a long time. Yes. Millennials will just quit a job and go somewhere else. Gen Z is doing more of like the labor union stuff, but I think millennials will leave. They won't stay at a job. Yeah.
And I also think millennials play a role in like as a millennial who manages Gen Z people. Millennials have a role in being like, you know what? this person shouldn't have to do what I had to do. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no reason an entry level person should have to work all the time. Mm-hmm. So, like, and that's fine. Like, I'm not doing anything wrong if she's not working constantly. Mm-hmm. Like, it's also on us to make sure we're letting them make those statements, and we're providing space for that, and not making demands that, like, we rejected at the time and we just think are like part of paying dues, because that was bullshit. And millennials luckily are onto it too. So I think that it's a good opportunity for Gen Z and millennials to like team up,
which we need to do. We need to stop. Millennials, stop making songs about them on TikTok.
No, nobody's doing that. That was like,
if you're paying somebody less than $50,000 a year, but not make them work more than 40 hours a week.
That's true.
I agree. And I do think that, like, I think the reason why Gen Z is the way it is because they saw, like, what happened to us when we were first entering the workforce, and jobs were so low, and there was, like, the unpaid internship expectation. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we learned a lot of things the hard way, I think, and got to a place where we're like, no, I'm not accepting this. Gen Z, like, saw us talking about it, saw the content we made about it, you know, like, you know, watched the movies and TV shows and all the things, and, like, they internalized those lessons before they even had to, like, enter the workforce, which I think is, you know,
the political issue. Can you guess? The thing that's really exciting for me is transportation. I think that more people are
Millie's over here still like, at least we passed the biff.
Well, I think that, you know, more people are riding bikes, more people are getting electric scooters, electric cars. Like, that is making me hopeful, and like, that is a big piece of environmental stuff. Obviously, there's like a lot of cool racial legislation stuff, but I just feel more hopeful about the transportation, about bikes and like, and yeah, like, as an urbanist, I think that people are seeing like the benefit in investing in public transportation. And I hope that, you know, we're one step closer to Japan or France. And with Biff, we are, you know, but like, one step closer to Japan or France, where, like, when I was sitting, you know, Japanese people don't use cars unless they go on a trip that's more than an hour. And I think that's what we need to do, like, start getting at in this country.
Yeah. Yeah. So somebody asked, Elise and Millie, where and how did you meet?
Oh, God, I don't even remember.
Probably some dingy basement improv world. Millie and I, we both did improv through UCB. So we met through that.
I remember, like, before I even met Elise, we did get an online fight.
I was wrong, too. So I can't even get into that.
Yeah, we're not going to get into the online fight, but we got in an online fight. But then, I don't know how me and her first met, but how I think we started becoming friends was, get this, hold your horses. There's an interactive kind of Sleep No More kind of play with an all-Latino cast about the Chilean mine collapse.
Right.
Where the audience was in the mines and we were all miners. And me and Elise were in that play. It ran for at least a year. Every Saturday,
that's crazy.
At least twice a month for a year. I think it was more though. I think we did it a long ass time.
That's crazy. We did it for a really long time, and that was a great play, and it was really fun. And at the end, it was in a basement, and so we would like open the hatch to get in the basement. Everyone would come out, and we had a little guy come in and be like, "You're safe."
Bo and Yang was involved in.
Bo and Yang directed it.
Directed it.
Bo and Yang directed it. Raleigh Williams, who's also like a really great climate change like influencer, like he makes a lot of really good content. Funny story: the guy who wrote that play, right? He went to Columbia, got his master's in environmental things, but he's environmental studies. But he's a comedian, and he has a really popular YouTube channel. And the guy who was my tour guide in Colombia with the motorcycles shared one of his videos. And I'm like, Jesus Christ. Like, this guy's like actually I don't know. But yeah, that's how me and Elise got close.
That is how we met, and it's a beautiful story that shows that you can get in a fight with someone on the internet and be wrong. And because I was wrong, and I was like caping for UCB. It's actually really embarrassing what was happening.
No, we don't have to go there.
We don't have to get into that. But what I will say is that beautiful friendships can come from anything.
But you know what? You know what that is also? Is that sometimes we're wrong online. And
sometimes we're wrong and online.
Life's not black and white.
Somebody asked us a really interesting question that I didn't put it on here because I couldn't immediately think of an answer and I wanted to give it a more time. But like, was there a time this year where you were wrong? Like you were really wrong about something, whether it was just misjudging a political event or actually being...
Ooh, I'm sure that I was. Like
having the wrong point. I can answer this. The only thing I can think of is like definitely this was the first year where we had a really intense situation with Israel-Palestine. And it was a learning experience to hear from people about I don't think that there is a way to cover that that pleases everybody, obviously. Mm-hmm. I won't repeat the words. It's complicated. I learned that. but there are definitely things during that I either posted or said on the podcast that I think we're not correct and that I wouldn't say again. But like, I'm pretty good at like mistakes are necessary, even bad mistakes. They hurt people and that's not okay. And you have to try to avoid them. But like people make mistakes and like, what's the tweet? Like normalize changing your opinion after more information or just, I think that's the first thing that comes to mind where like after a few months of processing, I could revisit and be like, what did I say or think or post that was not helpful or positive. But again, I give myself the credit where it's like, I don't know how you, but I mean, listeners to the podcast probably know, they probably know things we said that they still think about.
Yeah. And they're like,
yeah,
you almost lost me there, girlies.
I think for me, I think one of the things that I have not grown on, but like have listened is like Zoe Saldana gets a lot of backlash from like the Black American community about different roles that she takes, and she took a Nina Simone role. And at first, you know, there's just like, this is like some insular like fighting about, you know, how Dominican people like identify themselves and stuff. And I'm very sensitive to that. But I'm also, you know, I was just like, I don't know if she's identifying with like as a Black woman, like why is it wrong that she took this Nina Simone role? And I had like a darker skin, like Black friend just kind of explained that, you know, Zoe should be, you know, more responsible with the kind of roles that she's taking. And then like in her getting that role, it prevented like another like darker skinned person from taking that role, especially when so much of Nina Simone's music was about that. So like that was something that, you know, obviously I saw, but like I think the point is like having an in-person conversation about like an online thing and not keeping it online or doubling down, but like being willing, like the willingness, I think that was helps me like get a 360 view and have more informed opinions.
Right. Yeah. I think that's so true. Like when it's being approached as like, not just as a character assassination, like you said this and therefore you're bad, but rather like you said this, here's where I'm coming from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've had so many people like really clearly and nicely like explain things to me on the sub or like have good conversations with me in my DMs, which is again, why I like to check them because I actually do like to have like good dialogues back and forth. I feel like I'm like, now I feel like I'm not coming up with a specific thing and people are going to be like, Elise doesn't think that she's wrong, but.
No, I think it's just as helpful to answer it with like, they happen. And I think it's important to normalize them, especially
among people who do it for a living. That's the thing is that, like, Millie, what you were saying, I'm drawing a blank, but like, I know there's so many times where I've like changed my perspective just because I like heard what an affected person had to say a little bit or like just the open and Amanda, what you were talking about, like that was a really tough time on the newsletter too and trying to learn how to write about that situation like truthfully, sensitively, with a 360 view, etc. And it was a really huge learning experience trying to figure out how to tackle that within the newsletter.
I mean, personally, I feel like that's all the time. You know, I am in a Twitter bubble where I see a lot of like far leftist and I get frustrated and I'm not, or like, I, you know, I think that just happened in the last pod where I feel like I'm hypercritical of Biden or the Biden administration, when really, like, in having a conversation and like talking it out and actually laying down what has happened, it's not this like, oh, he hasn't done anything or this and that. And I think it's a good way of like hearing you frame it of like, it's about, we didn't hire someone that's not going to, or, you know, hire, vote for a president that's not going to make mistakes. We voted for a president that is able to admit when he makes mistakes and quickly fix them. And I think that's the difference between Trump and Biden.
Yeah. I saw another tweet just to close the loop on this topic that was like, I think this year, especially with Biden and power and kind of like the internet, like people on the internet who give a shit, lacking a common enemy, resulted in a lot of toxic interactions and a lot of blaming and a lot of like shaming that didn't need to happen. And I feel like this year I've definitely learned, like, that made me really reactive at some points, because when it's constantly coming at you. But I saw somebody tweet, like, if we keep tearing each other up, that's what keeps them in power. If we keep canceling each other and refusing to engage with each other because of minor things, it's like, it comes down to everything. It's like, we're shaming each other for not getting a PCR test. You got 3 vaccine doses. You've done everything you can. So I feel like it's a really thoughtful question to ask. I feel like it's been an important year of like metabolizing these conversations. Another one I wanted to make sure I asked you guys, because the person sounded like they really needed advice, was advice for public speaking.
Picture everyone in your underwear.
I also am petrified about it. Like, I don't know if we could do it. Like, if people want a live show, we'll do it, but I'm going to need help.
So Millie and I are people who I would say public speaking comes naturally to, but I think, for me, if I have a big show that I'm nervous about, like, practice, you know, run through it. Even if you're, cause I'm not someone who usually like writes an exact, like usually my stand-up is like a little diff, like I'm not like word perfect on all of it all the time, but I will like practice my set out loud. Or practice what I'm gonna say out loud. You can go slower than you think you can.
Yes.
That's the number one, is like, give yourself time to breathe, and like, you can go a lot slower than your body is gonna make you wanna go. So like, take the time. I'll also like, just plant your feet firmly on the ground. Like, give yourself like a solid foundation. Take a deep breath. Get into it. That is my advice.
I think that's great advice. I think going slower and breathing, like making sure to like breathe in between sentences and stuff, I think that's good. And for me, I think it does come naturally, but it's also like, but just doing it a lot, you know what I mean? Like, just acknowledging that that's something that you're scared of, and then going, you know, not letting those, like, that fear, like, take over, but just be like, yes, this is something I'm nervous about. Welp, and then, like, over time, it stops getting, I used to get so nervous before every improv show, every stand-up show, like, couldn't sleep, insane. Ugh. And now, like, when somebody...
That's hard to believe.
Yeah, well, no, well, it's true. But now when someone's like, oh my God, it's so hard what you're doing on stage. Now I'm like, oh, I've learned to have fun with that. And now the stressful part is like, before the show is like, oh my God, tickets. Oh my God, this. Oh my God, that. What outfit? You know, which is all the other shit about comedy. And the actual comedy is like the vacation. But I think it's because I did it so fucking much in all these different stupid ass scenarios. And, you know, it's just like, do it a lot and ignore the voices and breathe and go slow.
Yeah, breathe and go slow. I've never heard those. Those are great. Let's do a couple more. So overwhelmingly, the biggest question was just about the puppies and if they've met and how they're doing, if there are any challenges. They have not met yet, but we definitely need to do a play date when it's safer. But Tino's a couple, a little bit older and a little bit wiser. What's our Tino update?
More worldly.
Worldly. Tino, so Tino is 6 months.
And, oh my gosh.
Yeah, so I got him at 5 months. I got him a month ago, actually. Tomorrow it's going to be a month. Aww. And I think it is just us getting used to each other. He's like, I think, too friendly, doesn't know boundaries, like, like, will jump on people, you know, like, wants to play with every single body, so it makes it difficult. He's very curious about everything. Yeah, and I think that, you know, he's great, and, you know, I love him so much, and I'm really happy that I got him, but it is a lot of work, and I'm really stressed out, and it is, and I guess I was like kind of prepared for like the stress of having the puppy and figuring that out. And I have a dog walker, even though I work from home and all that. But I think the thing that I was unprepared for, which I'm sure Elise will talk about too, is like how much people project their shit onto you about like dog ownership and stuff. Like, you know, people just, it was really difficult.
Like mom shaming, but with dogs.
Yeah. Exactly. So even before I got the dog, when I was thinking about getting a dog, and, you know, I have my reasons, like, you know, my reasons were my mental health was not good. There was a point like a few weeks ago where I was really sick and I wasn't getting out of bed. And I'm like, yo, I can be in bed for a week and no one would know. Like, it's this super dark spiraling thing. And I'm like, I need something that's gonna like get me out interacting with the world, especially because I live alone and all this stuff. And like, there's all these other personal, like, mental health, family things that are tied into this decision of me getting a dog. But then when I would tell friends that I wanted a dog, they'd be like, you're too busy, or you can't do it, or this and that. It's just like, you're not even like, that was really disappointing. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm working through that in therapy. But then also just like, you know, I took him to a friend's house. Like, one of my neighbors had a little thing and I took him over, and he's like, oh, he's not trained, or he doesn't know how to do this, or he doesn't know how to sit, or it is mom shit. And I'm like, I felt really bad and I was embarrassed, but then we left and I'm like, I don't know, dude.
I've had him for a month. He's a puppy. You've had him for a month.
I've had him for a month. And also, like, your dog doesn't let me pet him. Like, you can carry my dog and he's very cuddly and he'll just get. So I'm just like, everyone's just fucking different, you know?
There is a lot of that.
It's a lot of that I have to, like, work through and whatever. But I love having a dog and I love him so much, but he's annoying as fuck.
Yeah. That's what dogs are supposed to. Yeah. Some people, it's like, yeah, you find, like, once you get a dog, you meet people that it's like, oh, you have a dog, you could be a dog person. But then it's like, you're being an asshole about my dog. Like, my dog's also not, Morty's not friendly. Sorry. Yeah. Like, I can't, what do you want? I'm not going to force this dog. Like, everyone's like, oh, but all dogs like me. I'm like, they're like, well, I usually get away with just saying he's a rescue, even though I rescued him very young. But like, I'm sorry the dog's not friendly. I'm sorry he doesn't want to say hi to you. I'm sorry all dogs like you. It is not my fault. Who cares? It doesn't affect you.
Guess you just met one that doesn't, man. Like, yeah. I don't know.
Have you had any of this?
Please.
Yeah, have you had any of this yet?
So not real. Aside from the fact that people thought I got my dog from a puppy mill, and I had to be like, he's not from a puppy mill. He's just a random farm happening.
Yeah.
Anyway, not really, but it's because Rusty is only 3 months old. He doesn't have all of his vaccines yet because he thinks there's a microchip, and we're working on it.
Your dog's anti-vax.
Because he thinks the ICE is going to use it to track him. But
well, you can't train him. You have to educate.
Well, we're working on it. Every day, I see, the thing about it is that I'm calling him in. I'm not calling him out.
Okay, good.
Exactly.
Good.
As we discussed.
But he doesn't have all his vaccines yet, so we can't really take him. We've taken him on, like, little test walks, and he's, like, not even able to go for a walk yet. He gets so excited. He runs in every direction. He starts freaking out, so we can't take him anywhere. Extremely cute, extremely smart puppy, but when you have a smart puppy, it goes in both ways. Mm-hmm. Like, he's smart for good, and he's smart for mischief. So, and then I have had many sub people ask about the meeting between Biz and Rusty. So,
oh, right.
They are tentatively getting along at this time. I think that they, and I'll preview this because I'm working on it for stage, but I think that they have they have the relationship of like a hot girl and a bro at the bar, where it's like every time he sees her, he darts right to her. He's like immediately like in her face. He's so excited, tail wagging, barking, going crazy. And she, it's too much. He comes on too strong and she will leave. But then if he starts to not be paying attention to her, she'll kind of walk by to make sure that he sees she's still paying. She's still got him. You know, yeah. If she wants to come back and get that attention, she can come back and get it at any time. Yeah. But so she plays hot and cold with him a little bit.
Didn't she run up on him and smack him in the face?
She did also do that. Yes.
It's a process.
Yeah. Again,
it's a process. And I'm sure you've gotten many
bro.
I feel like the pet shaming is good training for eventually being mom shamed. Because like at the end of the day, it's like Mike's always like, it's a dog. Like your dog, most dogs, if they have a warm place to be and a person that's their main person, they're happy.
Thank you. And like, that's like something that I had to.
Yeah.
No, that's my something
dog,
that I have
my
to
My dog
do.
Is pees on pads. And everywhere we go, we're like, fuck, is he going to, I have to hold him. Whatever. Who cares? I'll just hold him. Whatever. Yeah. I don't care.
Yeah.
It's my fucking dog. I have to deal with it.
Yeah. No, and that's a good point because I think that was getting to me. And I'm like, I can see why people get so uncomfortable by like unsolicited advice with their kids. Not that I couldn't before, but when you're like, yeah, it's fucking like it's an affront to you. But at the same time, it's like, dude, it's a fucking dog. I'm not hurting it. Like, I'm taking it out. It's fine. Just leave me
alone.
Dogs
are inherently happy. Even like stray dogs, you walk up to them, they're wagging their tail. All right. So we're going to finish up with some rapid fire questions because a lot of different people asked our like go-tos for various things. So your go-to cocktail. Mine's a Cosmo. I recently started drinking Cosmos again. I never really drank them because they were on Sex and the City, so I just assumed they were bad, even though I love Sex and the City. Recently had one. They're fucking delicious. I got kind of like, I don't want to say addicted because saying addicted to alcohol is problematic, but like they're so tasty like that Amanda. There was a week where I had like two every night and they have a lot of alcohol in them. So I definitely that's my go-to cocktail. Do you have one of these?
Mojito. Love a mojito.
I'm like, you know, if I go to a bar and they have something with ginger and lime and vodka or something like that, I love that. Love
is that ginger. A Moscow Mule?
Yeah, I guess Moscow Mule.
Or yeah.
But I also just love like tequila soda lime juice or vodka soda lime juice, which is basically a seltzer.
Yeah, solid. Your go-to comfort show that you just watch when you don't know what else to watch and need to feel good.
Ooh. It'll change a little, like it'll change depending, but right now we're rewatching Sopranos. And I know that's a weird comfort show, but it is the thing that we're turning on when we're like, what else do we turn on?
I think for me, it is Avatar The Last Airbender. I've watched it so many, it's so lame.
Ugh, mine's definitely at Seinfeld and also Veep, which I consider to be a unique one. Veep is so rewatchable. I think I repeat myself on the podcast all the time.
I started watching and I'm like, this is so depressing.
I guess now it's comfort because Veep. Trump's out. But okay, your go-to SSRI, if you're on one. I got to switch them up every few years. They stop working. So I've done Prozac, I've done Lexapro, I've done Zoloft, I've done Celexa. I think Prozac is my fave. Because it made me a little manic, but that's why I don't take it anymore.
I'm a Lexapro girl, baby.
Yeah.
I think,
7 milligrams.
Okay.
Just a dash.
My friend who works in pharma says that 16 weeks of talk therapy is the equivalent to being on SSRIs. So
yeah, why not both?
Yeah, why not both also? But I have not, not that I don't think I could be prescribed.
Your favorite SSRI is 16 weeks of therapy.
Well, bitch, and it costs a lot. So
yeah, it costs a lot more.
But yeah, I do a lot of therapy, but I haven't, and I think it's just because I haven't seen a psychiatrist that I haven't been, not because I'm like unprescribable, but it's more, I think
yeah,
I have a
obviously, yeah, talk to your doctor about any medications, but yeah, don't spot treat your anxiety. If you're anxious all the time, you can just take something every day that will help.
Yeah, I will say that I have been on SSRIs in the past, like in my on and off, like at various times, but I like would never take them and like whatever.
Oh, good. This,
yeah. Like, so they weren't helping because you actually do have to kind of take them every day. but over the pandemic, surprise, mental health, not in the best place, got on them, started on a like, even lower dose. Now I'm where I'm at. And like, I did find it really helpful. So,
No stigma. You know,
obviously, explore all of your options with your doctor. And your mental health is important.
Yeah. Your go-to dinner recipe. Do you have one?
I do.
From scratch or?
Anything. Just like, what's the thing you like make like almost every week? You always buy the ingredients when you grocery shop.
At least you can cover
My I just call it sausage pasta. And it's a cabbage, it's sweet Italian sausage pasta dish that my mom used to make when I was a kid. Comforting, easy to make. Actually pretty, I mean, really tasty and like not bad for you. So
we should share the recipes for these in the newsletter.
Sausage pasta.
Yeah. Yeah. Mine's I just make like little shawarma bowls. I just make, you know, just get a bunch of shawarma seasoning, put it on some chicken, bake it. I don't like vegetables, but I like them when, you know, you dice them up, put some lemon and olive oil on them. And then I make like a bootleg white sauce and then I'll eat that all week.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I guess like, cause I live alone, I'm like eating whatever. Yeah. Or like oven fries. But like, I guess if I'm actually cooking, I think my go-to is, I made it for Elise's bachelorette, but like my yellow rice with green onions.
Ooh.
And I guess chicken or steak and then like a tomato. Tomatoes, olive oil, salt, and pepper. I love that. And yeah.
These are good ones. Okay, I'm going to do one more because I like this question. Somebody said, I listen so much, I feel like we're besties. Who are your imaginary podcast besties? Who do you have a big parasocial relationship with?
Ooh, this is a really good one.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good closing one. I knew that would animate you so I could keep you around.
Lacey Mosley, the scam goddess, who I've actually met in person like once or twice, but like definitely parasocial at this. The amount that she knows me back is very minimal.
Yeah, very minimal to
the
it.
Amount that I know her.
That's so funny.
I fucking love Scam Goddess. That podcast makes me
I didn't
laugh,
listen to that.
Laugh.
It's just about it's different like, scams, right?
Oh, amazing.
It's so funny, and she's delightful, and she's got great guests. So yes, that is definitely one. Los Culturistas will also always do that for me, but we do also know
Matt
and Bowen, so it's like, some of them, it's a little like, I do know the people a little bit, but now I know that, now I feel like I have an asymmetrical relationship with them, where like, I'm like, well, I talk to you every day.
Right, right, yeah, just through this, I feel like I've gotten to, like, mine are definitely like, Alyssa and Aaron of Hysteria at Crooked Media, and we got to have Alyssa on, and that was like, no matter what, like, happens with this job, whenever I look at Alyssa Mastromonaco's Instagram stories, she's sharing my memes, and I'm like, that's all I need. That's all I need. So those two, definitely, and we've got to have Alyssa on. I love Rose and Jamie of, like, a Sex and the City recap podcast, and I got to go on that one. Also, Nicole Byer and Zashir D'Amato do a podcast literally called Best Friends, and so that's definitely parasocial as well. Oh, and Kara and Liza of That's Messed Up and SVU. Podcast. So I've got lots of them. Who are your podcast besties?
Oh man, mine are okay. I listen to a lot of like mental health podcasts. So Dr. Thema, she's like a psychologist that does like, basically she does little lectures on different subjects of like how to have boundaries. So I listen to it before I go to bed. And I do feel like she's very like, she's a psychologist. She actually recently, okay, this is like Real Housewives of Potomac, Giselle's baby daddy, Jamal, that's her brother. So this one's like a black woman.
Oh,
she's,
cool.
She's a psychologist, but she won her psychology board. Like, she's actually the president of the psychology board in America that just won like this month. But also, she's like does spoken word, and it's a little woo woo, like crazy shit. So I love that. My podcast besties for a while were Jon Favreau and
of course,
like all the crooked guys. But now, Esther Perel is my podcast bestie. I love listening to her.
Yes.
Like the Where Should We Begin podcast, when you're hearing her do couples therapy, I just feel like this bitch got it. Like, this is like her. And then I love Michelle T. She does like tarot readings, and she has a tarot podcast. Yeah. So she has a tarot podcast, and she's had a lot of guests. She's had Larissa Loizada Olivia, who has who's an author. She had her on recently, but basically she'll like bring guests on and read their tarot or read random people's tarot, or like, it's like really witchy and fun.
Yeah, so, that is fun. I feel like I've needed a lot more fun podcasts than political podcasts this year. So for those of you who stuck around with us, because we try to be both, thank you so much. These questions were amazing. This is such a great way to end the year. We just like talk into the void, and it's weird and nice to see when people that people are actually listening and they care about us. So it means the world. Until the end of democracy, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Elise Morales.
And I'm Lily Tamaras.
And this is the Betches Up Podcast. Bye.
Bye.
The Betches Sup podcast is produced by Amanda Duberman, Jorge Morales-Pico, and Sean Kilby. Editing by Jorge Morales-Pico. Social media by Amanda Duberman. Be sure to follow @Betches_Sup on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And send us your emails to suppod@betches.com. Betches.